Universal Music and Experience Hendrix present the Jimi Hendrix Experience live at Monterey, American Landing.
Dig, man, this, you know, I've been laying around and went to England, pick up these two cats, and now here we are, man. It was so, you know, groovy to come back here this way, you know, and really get a chance to really play, you know. Anyway, I'm going to sacrifice something that I really love, man. This, if, don't think I'm silly doing this, you know, because I'm not, I don't think I'm losing my mind. Last night, man, ooh, God. Wait a minute, honestly, wait. I'll tell you what, let's get down to business, all right?
Welcome to the Jimi Hendrix Experience, live at Monterey, American Landing, a celebration of Jimi's U.S. debut. I'm Gary Moore. Most people are familiar with the basic facts. Jimi Hendrix was an American guitarist who, in a short burst of creativity, changed the face of modern music and reinvented the possibilities for the electric guitar. He put out only a handful of records and died in his sleep at age 27. This is the story of Jimmy's early career. How he worked hard to learn his craft, was discovered in New York, whisked to England, formed the Experience, and then burst onto the international music radar with his incendiary American debut at the Monterey Pop Festival. Jimi Hendrix was born November 27, 1942, in Seattle, Washington, and grew up surrounded by music.
His father loved music.
Producer Eddie Kramer was Jimmy's studio collaborator and engineered all of his albums.
Jimmy just grew up with this wonderful heritage of blues and R&B surrounding him. And I guess when he grew up to be a young man and went into the army, when he got discharged, he and Billy Cox, who was his dear friend and bass player, they decided to go on the Chitlin circuit. And he played with many famous R&B singers. And so I think Jimmy's years in the army, the discipline of that, and then the discipline of going out on the Chitlin circuit, I think really helped him.
After he left the army in 1961, Jimi Hendrix paid his dues as a backup guitarist with everyone from Sam Cooke, Little Richard, and B.B. King to Wilson Pickett, the Isley Brothers, and Jackie Wilson.
He was really a product of the R&B system.
Vernon Reed, guitarist with Living Color, describes what that life was like.
There was certainly a very rigid hierarchy in R&B at that time. I mean, to be a member of the band, you were the backup band, you were backing up the star. And that's very much what it was about. I mean, it was not about the kind of all-for-one rock and roll band thing. I mean, that didn't exist. It was kind of like, you know, you're not the star of the show.
Jimi Hendrix.
Well, like Little Richard, Isley Brothers, you know, Wilson Pickett, Solomon Burt, Jackie Wilson, Sam Cooke.
So why'd you break away?
Well, you know, you get tired of playing other people's music all the time.
So what did you do?
So then I just, you know, went down the village, you know, just laying dead for a while, playing.
Jimmy moved to New York City. There, he played the small Greenwich Village coffee houses. In the fall of 1966, all across America, the British invasion was in full force.
It started in Liverpool, England, a sound, a feeling, an emotion. It started in Liverpool, England, and swept up the youth of the world.
For the first time, American radio stations were playing music from UK bands, the Beatles, the Stones, the Animals, and dozens of others. And British musicians, many of whom were playing reworked American blues to begin with, traveled across the Atlantic to explore the U.S. music scene firsthand. And that's how the bass player in the Animals, Chas Chandler, learned about the obscure young African-American guitarist playing electric blues in the New York clubs. Journalist Keith Altham.
Less than a year before Jimmy played Monterey, he was playing as an unknown in Greenwich Village when he was spotted by Chas Chandler, who was the bass player in the Animals and was looking for his first venture into managing a band.
We were in New York, of course.
Tappy Wright was the Animals' road manager.
Linda Keith, who was Keith Richards' girlfriend at the time, or was his girlfriend, I'd asked Chas to go along and see this guy sing, and she said he was, she felt he was going to be the new thing. And so Chas, of course, went.
Chas Chandler.
The only thing I wanted to do was take this guy to England, because I thought he would change the music face of England, if not the world. I knew he was going to be a sensation in England.
Eric Burdon was the Animals' lead singer.
He breezed into London, a total outsider, the lone gunman walking into Dodge, and cleaned up.
Yeah, his guitar slung across his back.
Jimi Hendrix and Highway Child from 1967. This is the Jimi Hendrix Experience, live at Monterey, American Landing. By making the rounds and jamming at London clubs, Jimmy's inventive guitar style quickly grabbed the attention of everyone who saw it. Chris Stamp managed The Who and started Track Records.
It's 1966. Kit Lambert and myself were partners. We were young filmmakers. We'd begun with The Who, and we were very involved in the whole sort of rock and roll sort of thing that was happening. And there were like three clubs at that time that you went to after the gigs, that sort of thing. We were at one of them. Chas came in with this guy, and, you know, from word go, right, and when he started to perform, we were just totally enamored. And we knew Chas, and we said, well, can we produce him? You know, we'd love to produce him. And Chas said, well, I'm going to produce him. We said, well, has he got a record label? and of course, he didn't have a record label. So we immediately, you know, got into the machinations of creating the record label because of Jimmy.
Chas Chandler had brought Jimmy to London, and Chandler realized Jimmy needed his own band.
And we sat at the table and literally did a deal on a BMAT for Jimmy to be on Track Records. We didn't even have a band at then. Noel and Mitch weren't there yet.
Jimi Hendrix.
And then we had a jam session at one club in England, you know. And that's how Mitch, Noel, and I got together. Noel comes down expecting to play guitar, you know. He was trying for the Animals. So I dug his hairstyle, so asked him to play bass.
I went to audition as a guitar player for the new Animals, because the Animals had just broken up.
Noel Redding was a lead guitarist when he auditioned as bass player for The Experience.
But that was in, let me think, late September 66. And Chas Chandler, God bless him, came up to me and said, can you play bass? And I said, no, but I'll try it. So I was handed this bass guitar, and there was this American gentleman there. There was a keyboard player, an Irish bloke, and a guy called Ainsley Dunbar. And we played three tunes without any vocals, and this American gentleman said to me, do you want to go down to the pub? Which is, like, for musicians, quite normal. So we went down this pub, and we talked about music. He was asking me about the English music scene at that point, and I was asking him about the American music scene at that point. Had he ever seen Sam Cooke, for example, or people like that? Then he said to me, would I like to join his group? And that was James Hendrix.
I got a phone call from Chas the Chandler. Hey, I've got this guy coming over from America. Da-da-da-da. Do you fancy having a play with him?
The third member of the Jimi Hendrix Experience, drummer Mitch Mitchell.
And he was the first person I knew, ever heard, that knew how to play that Curtis Mayfield style of guitar. And also, oh, you want Wes Montgomery? I mean, without being a flash git. As we started in 66, things happened so darn quickly.
Jimi Hendrix remembers the band's first performance.
I remember the first gig we did in England. People stood there with the mouths open. So I said to myself, damn, what happened, you know? Did we do good or do what, you know?
Before long, the talk of the London music community was the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, hold on, because today on the BBC World Service,
a trio which is blazing a trail through Britain.
He came over to Britain and absolutely wowed everybody here.
Sounds like you've never heard before. Pretty rare sound.
And I love to hear them sing.
A ridiculous crew, that's the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
The Jimi Hendrix Experience.
The Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Jimi Hendrix.
This is Jimmy.
Andrew Loog Oldham was manager and producer for the Rolling Stones.
There was definitely a time period where what was London up to? It was tracking Jimi Hendrix. I mean, nobody had much time off then, but what were they doing when they had time off? They were tracking Jimi Hendrix.
Noel Redding was bass player in The Experience.
About 66, towards Christmas, we became sort of like popular in London. We were doing all these clubs still. And we did this, it was a press thing, we played for 40 minutes. And we went into our cupboard, which was supposed to be our dressing room, you know. And we're sitting there, and John Lennon walks in with a huge joint. And I'm like 20 years old, you know. And he sits on the floor. That's great, man, you know, that's great. And then McCartney walks in. He sits on the floor. And then Harrison comes in. And I'm sort of like, forget it, you know. I was quite amazed. And then also Bill Wyman used to come to every one of our gigs and sit on the stage. It sort of freaked me out, being at that age, if you know what I mean.
In 1966 and 67, the Beatles and the Stones were the ultimate rock royalty. Chaz Chandler remembers.
The reason he took off so quickly in England was because of the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. The Beatles used to go, and the Stones would go to see Jimmy play anywhere, especially in the West End of London. They would talk about him in interviews. They'd say, this guy was, you know, you've got to go to see Jimi Hendrix. I put another 1,000 on the door the next day when Mick Jagger or John Lennon or Paul McCartney were saying, this guy's great.
The co-founder of Track Records, Chris Stamp.
I mean, he was accepted by the British audience with a reverence that had happened with the Beatles, that happened with him. You know, he was loved in England, and immediately, you know, and really appreciated as the great artist that he was.
Once again, Noel Redding.
The reaction from the audiences were amazing. Those early, it'd be autumn 66, that would be. That's when we sort of noticed that we were attracting all these people to these little clubs we were playing at. And then suddenly we did a TV show, put out Hey Joe, and suddenly we had a hit.
Very first single released from the Jimi Hendrix Experience, Hey Joe, recorded in 1966. Journalist Keith Altham.
They were struggling to get a foot in the door in America, but what they did have was the word within the business. And Chaz now had to sort of like move towards the next stage, and the next stage was obviously to break America.
We'll hear more from Jimi Hendrix and Noel Redding, as well as Steve Miller, Eric Burden, and Michelle Phillips, when the Jimi Hendrix Experience, live at Monterey, American Landing, continues.
It's really out of sight here. Didn't even rain. No buttons to push.
40 years ago, they landed on U.S. soil, and music has never been the same. The Jimi Hendrix Experience, live at Monterey. A special anniversary CD, DVD, and limited edition numbered vinyl LP. The performance of the Jimi Hendrix Experience at the Monterey International Pop Festival propelled Hendrix and his bandmates to the top ranks of international rock royalty. And this release captures the excitement of that pivotal time in rock and roll and pop culture history.
Excuse me for a minute, just let me play my guitar, right?
The DVD includes rare interviews, never-before-seen camera angles, and concert footage from the earliest known unreleased Experience performances. The Jimi Hendrix Experience, live at Monterey. On CD, DVD, and limited edition numbered vinyl LP. Now available at all Best Buy locations.